Today's program was brought to you by Roth, Wisconsin, makers of the world's best cheese and pioneers in the U.S. artisan cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Cynthia Cherish Maller and Reverend DJ Cherish the Love, and you are listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network. So before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love, and that is love spelled L-U-V, and hashtag using Primary Food, Heritage underscore radio, and hashtag RevLove. So happy, happy new year, 2017. Wow. Oh. Yeah, we were so done with 2016. So done. And welcome to the fourth season of Primary Food. Let's hear that applause again. Yay!
Yay! Yay! Yay!
Oh, no, not the horn.
The horn.
I hate that horn.
So what exactly is Primary Food? I learned this really great concept in nutrition school at IIN, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, that the food you eat, you know, the stuff we put in our mouths and chew and enjoy, the stuff that we're looking at right here at Roberta's, these two guys eating pizza, we consider that secondary food. Primary food is everything else in life that nourishes us before we sit down and eat, and that's stuff like enjoying music, reading a book, hanging out with friends, cooking food, a great job, creative expression, playing games, exercise, and so on, you know, vacation, stuff like that. And I am so glad that I learned this because it was the high-quality primary food that I kept in my life while going through chemotherapy last year that kept me happy and healing my cancer. So, Primary Food is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. So, help keep Heritage Radio Network alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate in the upper right-hand corner. Do it now. Do it while you're listening. Do it at the end of the show. And, you know, I'll send you all sorts of good juju. I'll love you forever. So today we are talking about music and performance as our primary food, how music and performance feeds our soul. And I have DJ Crystal Clear.
Hello.
With me today, sometimes known as Crystal Durant.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
What's up, Crystal?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, so good. We're going to have a really great time because Crystal came in with stories.
I always have a good story.
We got stories.
I do.
And, you know, I've been blessed with a wonderful Christmas gift. Ubiquity Records in Costa Mesa has granted me permission to spin their entire discography on air and wherever I gig, which is awesome.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's funk soul. It's music that's quite rare, and I'll be dusting it all off and giving it new life. So, Ubiquity Records was founded in 1990 out of the Groove Merchant record store in Lower Haight of San Francisco, California. And following the success of the Groove Merchant shop, named after the, you know, Sly and Family Stone song, the Love and Haight record label was launched. And in 1993, the record was, the company was incorporated as Ubiquity Recordings. And it's located in Costa Mesa, California, with a satellite office in San Francisco, California. Ubiquity has two imprint labels, Love and Haight, specializing in rare groove, and Cubop Records, specializing in Latin jazz and salsa. So, including all three imprints, the label has released over 350 albums covering genres from reggae to Latin jazz. And a huge love and shout out to my music family there in Costa Mesa and LA. Mr. Chin, Enrique, Darren at Ubiquity, Tyler Thurmond, Kimberly Moore, Chica Soul, Aloe Black, Micah, Ross Russell. The list keeps going and going. I'm sure you have a few shout outs for LA. you've had some experiences in LA.
With me? Yeah. Oh, yes. All the Old Tower Sunset crew from the 80s when I worked there. Gadzooks, there's so many people.
So many people.
Yeah, Gary and Bill and Jim, and I feel like I'm looking in the magic mirror.
Yes. Magic Garden.
Oh, and my friend Eric Paparazzi, who lives out there, moved out there last year. He's a guitar player with Cat Power and plays with Bambichino here in the city whenever he's in town.
Oh, we like that.
Really great guitar player. Eric is awesome.
We should all jam. Crystal.
Yes.
Crystal. So Crystal and I, sometimes we sit around and we create, I don't know, funny band names out of horrible experiences in life.
Out of basic conversations.
We'll have basic conversation and go, oh my God.
Band name.
Yeah. Lengthy yeast infection. That's my new band name.
That's my new band name. Yeah. Well, that's the thing I do on Facebook. Anytime somebody says something kooky, then I write, you know, I rewrite it and I was like, my new band name. And that's what I'm known for. And it kind of works on people's nerves, but I don't care because it's still funny.
Who cares? And you and I have a lot of friends in common.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Quite a few friends in common.
Because New York is a small town.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah, yeah. Let the name-dropping portion of the show begin.
Yeah, exactly. Too many people.
We have a very cool common friend who plays the drums.
Which one?
Which one? I'm talking about Amir.
Oh, yes, Amir. Yes, I've known Amir. You may know him as Questlove or Gomez or Questlove, whatever the heck. Yeah, I've known Amir for a really long time from Philadelphia, where I lived. I moved there in the 80s to go to college. I'm originally from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania Dutch, shout out,
what?
Yo. And, well, both my parents are from there. So I went to the Art Institute.
Now.
You want some shoe fly pie now? Out in the lights, y'all. And I went to the Art Institute of Philadelphia from 83 to 85. And then I moved here to New York. Then I was living in Los Angeles. Then I went back to Philadelphia in the 90s, went back to school, got more degrees. And he and I used to DJ together along with King Britt and Dazia and Josh Wink and Cosmo Baker at the Five Spot in Philadelphia, and also, well, a bunch of other places. But, yeah, the Five Spot and Silk City. Yes, Silk City.
Do you know that he was the one that taught me how to use my Pioneer?
Oh, yeah, you
DJM
did tell me that. Yeah,
800
yeah.
mixer. I'm going to tell David in the sound booth. I don't think he knows this story.
That is a good story.
A couple of years ago, I got this text message that said, Amy Schumer's birthday party. Questlove needs to borrow your turntables and mixer. I'm looking at this text like, doesn't he have? No, it was just like a kind of an impromptu thing. So I packed up my gear and I was like, this is not really happening. But I'm going to the address, this mysterious, you know, answering this mysterious text message. I get there, and actually he gets on the elevator the same time as me, and I was like, oh my God, you smell so great. So we get up there to the top of the building, and I'm like, well, I have the gear. And he goes, wait, I'm DJing?
That happens to him a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and it was wonderful, and he actually showed me some things I was doing wrong on my mixer. Namely, and you're going to love this, I was watching him and I was, you know, really not familiar with setting up this mixer. I'd just gotten it and I was like, you know, sometimes I play records and it's like, oh, there's like noise, like what's going on? And I watched him take that little wire at the back and ground it. And I was like, that's what that's for.
You know. Wait, your hamster wasn't on?
No, my hamster was. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was scratchy. Yeah, and that's what happened. And, you know, big shout out to you, Quest, because I also use your Ludwig pocket drum kit to help with my cancer neuropathy in my hands. It's been a really great tool for me.
Oh, you got one of those?
I have one of those in my studio. There's tiny drum set in the corner of my studio.
That's cool, though.
That I bang around on, and it's really wonderful.
I thought of an idea for him to sell those drums. I thought of an idea for a commercial that I actually want to shoot.
Oh.
Should I say it now?
Go say it.
Okay.
Here's like a kind of the run through for it.
All right. Here's copyright. Nobody steal this idea. My lawyer's on speed dial if anybody takes this. So Amir, this is my idea. I live in New York City, and in many subway stations, there are people banging on these goddamn paint cans, buckets, and it makes me insane. They've been doing it for centuries, and I'm wondering, why are people still fascinated at these mofos banging on paint buckets? It sounds horrible. You're in the station where the noise is rattling around because of the tile and the metal and all that crap. It infuriates me. I just want to... I was so close to kicking them over one day on some dude. I was just like, I can't just... here's $10. Just stop it. Give me the fucking buckets and let me get out of here. So anyway, here's my idea. You get the pocket drum kit, right? Uh-huh. You go up to one of these jackasses banging on these fucking paint buckets and you say, yo, homie, do you know how to play drums? Well, here's a drum kit. You unpack it, you give it to... Then you get drumming. You get actual drumming.
You know, I kind of like the paint buckets once in a while.
Okay, after the show's over, we're no longer friends.
David knew that was going to happen. He knew there was going to be an end of a friendship in this 45 minutes.
I love it, yeah. But isn't that a good idea? And he could go to all these different subway stations and give, you know, give these people an actual drum kit to show how portable it is. You can pack it up. You can take it to any station. Play the goddamn drums.
I think, you know, well, let's work on this because I do have the kit. So
see,
bring it in.
We're going to shoot this.
Now, David in the booth, you're from Philly. So you guys like know a little Philly
I
stuff
am, yeah.
happening.
Oh, but wait a minute. You're much younger than I am. How old are you?
34.
Oh yeah, you're way too.
And I'm outnumbered. It's too Philly against
me. Yeah, we don't. I doubt we know any of the same people because I'm over 20 years older than you are.
But we all are into music, and we all, you know, agree that music feeds our soul. And you know, that's really why I brought you here, Crystal. We're going to talk about creativity.
Yes.
How it feeds your soul. How, you know, the projects you're working on. I especially love that in this new year you put out into the universe, and I'm helping you further it, that you want to do more performing.
Yes. And it's already started to manifest itself.
Hello.
I shit you not.
Yeah. I don't distrust this.
Yeah. So I've never been a person to formally make resolutions or to say them or recite them or any of that jazz. But now that we live in the future, and you can put anything about yourself out there and have you think that only your friends see it, but then it turns out that millions of people, or hundreds or thousands or whatever people see it, and it's gobsmacking to me every single time a complete stranger will be like, I saw you, ba ba da ba da. And I'm like, what? You're paying attention to me? That's weird.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So on Instagram is my primary thing, and Facebook, those are my two majors. And since you can make Instagram automatically go to Facebook, it's a no-brainer. So I did a show on New Year's Eve. It's a show. It's the last Saturday of every month at Arlene's Grocery by a group, a conciliary of metalheads.
And it's Hold on, I like that phrase. Is that a new band name?
That's my new band name, conciliary of metalheads. And it's called F-Bomb, and it's been going on for 10 or 15 years or something, led by Morgan Liebman, who's a really cool dude. Yo, what up, Morgan? And the first one I did was last winter. It was David Bowie. Uh-huh. And it was just supposed to be for his birthday, and then he wound up dying.
That's
so
what you did.
I did. Oh, it's all my fault. So I've been in this show for almost a year now. And on New Year's Eve, normally it's, you know, it's a genre, it's an artist, or it's a band. And it's two sets are done. There's an acoustic set, and then there's an electric set. And that's the normal thing. But on New Year's, Morgan got very adventurous and was like, yo, we're going to do four sets, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s hits. It's going to be great. Yes. And it was amazing. I was scheduled to only sing two songs, Love is the Drug by Roxy Music and Are You Going to Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz in the 70s and 90s sets, and do backing vocals throughout mm-hmm. all the sets, which was cool. But there's this weird cold germ thing going around. I call it a malaise. That's for my friend Bran. And so people got sick. And we had rehearsals all week long, twice.
Something that you planted, by the way.
No, I did not. And so one girl completely lost her voice. And it's the night of the show. And it's her, like, her song is next. And they didn't have it. And it was like, can you do Bay City Rollers Saturday Night? Sure, I can do that song. I've known that since 1974. I did it. Then another guy, he was like, I'm supposed to do Heat of the Moment by Asia, but I can't hit the notes. Can you do that? Sure, I can do that.
This is an awesome show.
So I got out there and I sang that. And so I did, you know, four songs instead of two and all these backing vocals. And it was really great because the past 3 years, I always did New Year's Eve. I DJed at Tavern on the Green, which the money was fantastic, but the crowd sucked because it was all these uptight rich folks who were like, can you play some dance music? I just played Michael Jackson, Donna Summer, Prince, and Lady Gaga. What kind of dance music are you talking about?
They're thinking about Brown-Eyed Girl.
Can you play Hotline Bling? I'm like, no, get away from me. So while I made no money, I had a really great, it was one of the best New Year's Eves ever. So one of my resolutions, I had the wristband on my wrist that said band, and I have a tattoo of a 45 record adapter on my right wrist. And so I just took a picture of it, and I said, you know, resolution number one, to do more of this. And a friend of mine who runs a bar out here in Crooklyn called me up last night, and he's like, hey, I want you to have a regular DJ slot here, and, I, you know, can you bring a band in here on the 20s such and such? And I was like, yeah, I'll throw one together. I'll do it. So just boom, just like that, within 3 days, 4 days. What day is it today? What's the date today?
I think the 5th.
The 5th?
Something.
Yeah, so 5 days, it's already manifested itself. Just through the magic of Facebook and Instagram.
I think that is, you know, everyone connects to music in some way. So when you put yourself out there like that, you're going to attract that kind of, you know, like attention. Now, what does it do for you when you're singing, when you're on stage? How does it feed you and like make you grow and all of that? What did that show do for you internally?
Internally, it made me feel all warm inside. Singing is something that I did not plan on doing as a career. I was in the chorus in elementary school, in sixth grade or whatever. I was in the band. And I loved it, but I wanted to be the black female Andy Warhol of the new century.
I love that.
And that's all I felt, because I started off as a graphic designer. My mother was an artist. She started off as a painter, then became a master tailor and a clothing designer. I never wore any store-bought clothes until I was in junior high, and I had to get a pair of Gloria Vanderbilt turquoise jeans. And so I always loved singing, and I've been DJing since the 70s, but I never really took it seriously. And then when I was teaching full-time over here at the Grand Street campus, shout out Legal Studies, yo. One of the teachers there, she goes, oh my God, there's this great karaoke night at Pianos. Uh-huh. And we got to go. And I said, oh, geez, you know, whatever. She's like, no, it's live band. You got to go. So I went and wound up singing like 5 songs with no lyrics because I'm older than everybody else there. And they were just like, oh my God, you know all the words to White Wedding? Of course I do. Who doesn't know all the words to White Wedding, you dummy? So then there was another karaoke night, traditional karaoke, in Googie's Lounge up above the living room. And that was hosted by Shandy and Rick. Rick Conti and Shandy Sullivan, who is also known as Shanthrax to the Max. You may remember her from America's Next Top Model. I think it was the second cycle when they went to Italy and she slept with a guy in a hot tub and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, so I went to that night, and the first song that I did was, Psycho Killer by the Talking Heads. Mm-hmm. And I knew the song, and I did it, and I got a standing ovation. And it was ding. And I said, oh yeah, I forgot that I could kind of do this. And so then I went every chance I could get. And then when I stopped teaching full time, I went every Monday night. Became really great friends with Shandy. She's one of my best friends. And Rick. And that's how the ball started rolling. Then I said, I want to do a Loser's Lounge show. Now, for those of you who don't know, Loser's Lounge is a show that's been going on. It started at Pink Pony, then it was at Fez, and now it's at Joe's Pub. Started by Joe McGinty. Shout out Joe McGinty. And the band is the Custard Kings. Yo, David Terhune. And it's a show that I've been seeing since Fez, really. I saw it at Pink Pony a couple times.
This episode's going to have a lot of tags.
Oh, sorry.
I love it.
A whole lot of tags. And so I was like, I want to get in that show. And I needed to figure out how. My friend Dave Terhune is the lead guitar player there. And I was like, dude, how do I get in this thing? He's like, oh, well, it's kind of an audition process. You got to go to Joe's Piano Karaoke Night and sing. And then, you know, let him know you'd like to do the show. And then maybe he'll call you. So I did it. And this was February of 2010. And I went to the piano karaoke he was doing at the old Manhattan Inn in Greenpoint. It's no longer there. RIP. And I did Fox on the Run, and I did Psycho Killer. And I got two standing ovations, and people just lost their minds. And so then afterwards, I was like, yeah, you know, I kind of like to do Loser's Lounge, blah, blah, blah. And because that the upcoming show was Queen. So he goes, oh, well, you know, I've kind of got it all filled up, but, you know, I'll keep you in mind for the next show. Okay, cool. So 2 days before the show, I'm crying my eyes out during my prep period at this crazy-ass school. And I get a text message, and it's from Joe. Or I get an email. And he's like, hey, somebody dropped out. If you want another one that bites the dust, it's yours. And I was like, what? So I'm pacing the room. I'm freaking out. I text my friend David. I was like, give me Joe's number. I have to text him right now and tell him yes, yes, yes. So I did it. And then I'm like, my heart is pounding. I'm freaking out because I was like, sure, another one bites the dust. Everybody knows that song. I can do that, whatever. And then school was over. I go home and I'm just spazzing. And then I listened to the song and I was like, holy shit, Freddie Mercury, you dumbass. You can't hit those notes. So then I called my vocal coach and I said, you got to help me because I got to do this show. And it was already after rehearsal.
Wow.
So I could only run it during sound check the day of the show, the night of the show. And it's Saturday night and I'm doing both shows. That's a hazing.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I call my vocal coach, please, Alanya, I got to do this. I got to do this. And she's like, sure, you know, come in with the backing track. So she taught me how to hit high notes using my nose and squeezing your ass cheeks together. For all you singers out there, you know that's true. That's what works. I have a big ass, so I have a lot of squeezing to do, but I can get those notes. And so I do it during sound check, and I walked out on the stage. And I looked at Joe, and he's like, okay, so you're ready to go? And I said, yeah. And I look at the band, and they're all like, oh, yeah, it's so great. You're in the show. And so then, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and then I blacked out. No. Then they finished, and I sort of came to. I had, like, a fit of hysterical blindness. And so I kind of snapped out of it, and I looked around at everybody, and they were all, you know, like, gobsmacked. And I said, was it okay? Do we need to do it again? And they were like, no, it was perfect.
Oh, wow.
Do you want to do it again? And I
Wild.
Said, well, no, I mean, if it's cool. And they're like, oh, my God, yeah.
Wild.
So that was my first Loser
that,
show.
You know, that's amazing.
And then we had an encore at the fucking, Bowery Ballroom. A week later.
I got to catch that.
Or at the Gramercy.
I got to catch the next one. We're going to talk more about today's Black Renaissance woman, Crystal.
Oh, that's me.
That's her. We're going to take a little music break and then a little hear a little bit from our sponsor. But this first track is Psyche of Sound, Change the World.
Shady, baby.
Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sirchois is the 2016 World Cheese Champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sirchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sirchois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolette and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
Yeah, that was Psyche of Sound, Erish Davis, singer-songwriter, fierce guitarist, beatmaker, friend of mine, spoken word artist, Zendrum Beast. Shout out to David Haney and my Zendrum family. So, Crystal.
Hello.
So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, there are a lot of sacrifices to being in the music world.
Yes.
You can
there are
talk about that for a second.
Just to be an artist, period.
Yeah. Although it's worth it.
It's completely worth it. I've been a visual art teacher for over 20 years, and one thing I was always telling my students, even though they, you know, really didn't want to be an artist, and that was fine, but the overall game plan, what my parents told me when I was 10, was to figure out what you love doing and how to make money at it. And that way you will, quote, never work a day in your life, end quote. And it's really true, because there is nothing worse than getting up and going to a place that you hate, being surrounded by people you can't stand, doing a job that you don't give a shit about, and that's your existence. And then you get a ya-ya here and there on the weekends, and that's it. Like, that's your whole life for 50 years, and then you get a gold watch and you retire from the soup can company.
You don't even get a gold watch anymore.
Well, that right, because now we live in the future. You don't get crap. So I did not want to live that life. And it was a constant battle between me and my father and my sister and my father and my mother and my father, because my father was an electrical engineer. He was the first black engineer ever hired at what is now AT&T.
Wow.
In a managerial position. So this was Allentown in 1963, and went through all kinds of crazy crap there. But anyway, his stubbornness and steadfastness, I always also inherited that, and a crazy sick work ethic. So he was always like, well, you got to get a job that you can retire from, and blah, 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 blah. You can't just make art for your life. That's crazy talk. And, you know, so on one hand, I was determined to prove him wrong. And sometimes I feel that to the my detriment, meaning I don't have a 401k, I don't have a savings account, I don't have great health insurance, I don't own anything, you know, like I'm two steps from being completely underground. Like all I need to do is get rid of a bank account and I can be ghost and get out of here. But the flip side of that is I wake up every day super happy about what I'm doing. My full-time, part-time job is I'm a model at the Art Students League and the National Academy and some other studios in town. And, you know, with the model bookings, I basically make my own schedule. I pick and choose what I want to do. And in addition to that, I'm a DJ. I'm a graphic designer. I do social media consultation. My number one client is Bon Jovi, a really great restaurant in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. Seafood place. What the hell else do I do? I sing, I write, I'm working on a book inspired by you to finish this damn thing.
Yep.
Because every time I write my crazy stories on Facebook, everybody's like, when is your book coming out? I can't die. So I'm finally sitting down and busting my ass to get this done. I need to get 3 chapters done by March. That's my goal. And one of my best friends has been in publishing for 10,000 years, my friend Carly. And she said that she would edit for me. So,
I mean, you really are the creative Renaissance woman.
I do a lot of things, but I love doing them all. And yes, I'm a Gemini, for those of you who are wondering.
But who were your influences? You mentioned your sister, your mom.
Yes, my mother, huge influence. My sister, she's 5 years younger than I am, but she still influences me in many ways. She's also an artist. She has a company called Yay 9. That's Y-A-Y and the number 9.com. She designed these 3 little black girls who are a reflection of me, her, and our mother. And it's about, now the kids call it black girl magic. But we were doing this for years before they came up with a hashtag. It was before hashtags existed, if you can believe that, people. There was a time
when
it was just
a
number sign or a pound sign, yeah, on a phone. You know what a phone
years
is?
Ago.
Yeah, the rotary. You don't know that, you kids, you punk-ass kids. So those 2 main influences. And then Andy Warhol, huge influence. Mr. and Mrs. Petro, my elementary school art teachers, huge, gigantic influence. It's part of the reason why I became an art teacher, because of those 2. Music, I was always listening to it as a child. My mother was into rock and roll. My father was more into jazz and a little bit of classical. I have jazz musicians in my family. Ray Bryant was my uncle, who died some years back, Kevin Eubanks, you may remember from The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. He's my cousin.
Wow.
His brother Robin, jazz trombone player. Younger brother Dwayne Eubanks, who has a septet and a sextet and a quartet and everything tet. He plays here in the city. And his twin brother Shane, who lives in Philadelphia, who's a music teacher. And yeah, so music has been a big part of it.
Your entire background,
everything,
is fed and informed by music and creativity.
Yes.
If there was no music in your life, would you like?
I can't even begin to fathom that. I really can't. That's the question. When I would ask my students at the beginning of a semester, when I'm trying to get them to understand that art touches every single part of your life, every day of your life, whether you like it or want to believe it or not. And when I get them thinking about, you know, it's the clothes you're wearing, it's the toothbrush you used, it's the subway that you rode, the car you drove in. Imagine if those things were not touched by art, and by art meaning not just the design, but there's color and there's shape and there's ergonomic, you know, all that stuff. And they can't, you know, wrap their brains around it.
Right.
Because, you know, it's like, well, what kind of clothing would you be wearing if there were no clothing designers and if there was no color? What would it be? What would it look like? And finally, one girl's like, I think it would be like that paper gown you wear in the doctor's office.
Even that was designed.
But even that was designed, you know? So you'd everybody just be like naked sitting on rocks, I think.
That just is such it's winter right now.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just, you know, I think that's what would happen.
Oh, we're going to take another little musical break, and we're going to continue the talk about, you know, music and its value in our lives. You have a choice of making what we have, make it feel good from the bad. Yeah, turn a dark frown to a smile, brighten up, don't waste any time. Choice by the London Project. Now that's a really cool
I like
track.
That song. That was
yeah,
hot.
Let me tell you about this track because it was sent to me by a friend of mine who's the drummer, Reinar Krog. He's in Denmark. So he just, you know, told me all about it. So the music for this project is built up from the bottom with a strong groove, and then everything takes form from there. So the music itself was played in a live session with Luke Smith, who played with George Michael,
oh, yeah.
Corey Henry, who we all love, Snarky Puppy and everything, yeah. Andy Smith on guitar, DW on bass with Jill Scott, Phoebe Edwards on vocal, she sings with Jesse J, Gabrielle, Donna Summer, Macy Gray, Rod Stewart, names, Luke Smith on keyboard and piano. So Reinar, he had told me that eventually they produced the song with Joey Grant on bass and Gavin Holligan as a producer and extra keyboard player, and they had a lot of fun creating this song during the production, and you know, the groove is just so strong and so funky. They wanted it to be so strong that it would kill people.
Ow! It punched me in my eye.
Just to give you an idea of the vibe behind that song.
That's good.
Yeah, I was really psyched to introduce that to everyone listening. So, you know all about, like, just putting things together and putting it out there for people. I kind of like, I see it like feeding people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is such an incredible shared experience, music.
It is, and it's a really great community here as well. once my singing stuff got rolling with Losers Lounge, then other people asked me to sing in their tribute shows and stuff like that. And it, I got into other conciliaries of musicians, a group of people who would gig regularly at Rockwood Music Hall. My little brother, Adam Minkoff, and, you know, Jordan Scannella, blah, blah, all these people who are, without a doubt, some of the best musicians in New York City. I mean, hands down. My friend Adam can play anything and play the crap out of it 2 seconds after you hand it to him. He's a prodigy. He's amazing. My friend Paul Bertolino, who does my Purple Rain show with me every year.
Which I saw, which was great. Paul's amazing.
He is.
He's amazing.
Ridiculously,
Paul, you're amazing.
He's a ridiculously great singer. Falsetto for days, motherfucker, for days. I can't do that show without him because I can't sing that high shit.
plus the pants.
Oh, yeah. He does. He makes his own outfits. He's brilliant. He also does an amazing Alice Cooper.
Wow.
He's killer. And all the musicians who've played with me in my Prince shows and just... everybody, like, I'm surrounded by incredible singers. Just, it's ridiculous. I'm so amazingly fortunate, and I know it sounds corny, but everybody says, I'm so blessed. And I'm not religious, but, you know, if that's going to bring it home for you, then that's what I am. Because I never, ever thought that I would be doing this at this age at all. Mm-hmm. I just didn't. And it's been... really great to be able to wake up and do everything that I want to do. I'm not rich with money, but I'm rich with really close friends, a lot of ride or die
relationships.
It's really super everything. Important out there, people, because, you know, it's like you can have all the money, but if you don't have good people around you, then what's the point?
And that's more primary food right there.
Yeah.
Your relationships, the people you keep around, the kind of stuff that you do, the projects that you create. Are you working on new projects now that we should put out there into the friendly universe?
In the friendly universe? Well, right now I'm trying to put another tribute band together. I already have a Who tribute band called These Kids Are All Right.
Yeah.
And we've been doing shows sporadically for the last 3 years.
Now, where did that title come from, that name?
Well, you know, because their song, The Kids Are All Right. And I put together this show... and I booked it, and then they're like, so what's the name of your band? And I was just like,
I needed that story out there.
Yeah, I was like, how the hell do I? And so then I'm racking my brain, because I literally had 10 minutes to give them a name. And so I'm racking my brain thinking of all the songs, and I was like, and I was like, oh, These Kids Are All Right. Okay, that's great.
I love that story.
Yeah, I felt like such an idiot. Oh my gosh. But because I never thought, that's been a milestone, because I never, ever, ever thought that I would have that band. That was something I dreamt of doing when I was 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, wow. I love
that. Because my mom was into The Who, and that's how I got turned on to them. And, you know, she was playing Quadrophenia and Tommy and all that, and I saw the movie Tommy when, you know, I was in third grade or something, and burned in my brain. And I just thought, man, I would love to be on stage singing those songs.
There
but that'll never happen, because who's going to... some black chick singing Roger Daltrey, a Who band? I don't think so. And then here's another Losers connection. That first show that I did, Ira Elliott from Not a Surf was filling in on drums that night.
Oh, cool.
We're backstage at the Gramercy. That's where the encore show was, at the Gramercy. And we were talking about music that we loved. And he goes, who's your favorite band? I said, The Who, of course. And he's like, oh, my God, The Who, they're so great, blah, blah, blah. And he's such a... drum weirdo. He's going all this stuff about Moon and this and that. And I said, man, I would love to do a Who tribute band. And he's like, I'm in. That's it. You can't have any other drummer. I'm in that fucking band. The end. And I was like, okay. So then I got some other musicians together and we did it. And I think there are pictures of me. I burst into tears after I sang the encore song, because I could not believe that it actually happened.
And you need to get that together again.
Well, that's what I'm working on. So yeah. I'm trying to get another Who show together with a different incarnation of the band, because now Ira primarily lives in Florida, and I've got, you know, 10 different drummers who want to do it, and 6 different guitar players who want to do it, and all these bass players who want to do it. So I've got the band. Now I have to work around everybody's schedule, because my keyboard player, Brad Whiteley, is... he plays with Regina Spektor.
Wow. No,
and I think he's going out on tour with her again. So, and I can't do the show without him, because he is a human robot. Like, he, when we, the first show that we did, Won't Get Fooled Again, he goes, okay, well, you know, I'll work on the, you know, the synth stuff and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, all right. I literally like, boop, turned off my phone. 2 seconds later, he called me. He's like, how's this? And he did it. He programmed it all. And he's just like, well, yeah, you know, whatever. So I'm working on that. And then I'm also working on another tribute band that I've been talking about for years, but I'm determined to get this show done and off my, it's like the monkey on my back. I'm going to do a whole tribute band.
Wow. Okay, listeners, if you're hearing this, you can give her the pressure.
Yes.
Give her the pressure. Just accountability partners.
Poke me, prod me, whatever, force me to do this. But here's the thing. It's not just going to be a whole tribute band. The ultimate dream, the top layer of the dream, is for it to be all black women and call it Black Hole. That's
I think David liked that.
You like that?
That laughing.
That's tier one. Tier two is just like me and a bunch of black dudes. It's still going to be Black Hole.
Well, you know, I want to talk more about Black Hole, but we're kind of so out of time.
Oh, shit.
Where can people find you online to poke and prod you about Black Hole and then some?
You can find me on Instagram at DJ Crystal Clear. I'm on Twitter at DJ Crystal Clear 6, I think.
I shouldn't even know.
You know, because there's some other DJ Crystal Clear who I have yet to squash, but they took my name. But yeah, I think it's DJ Crystal Clear 6. And on Facebook, I have a DJ Crystal Clear page, but you can find me by my, as my students would say, government name, Crystal Durant, and that's D-U-R-A-N-T, period. It's French.
Everyone go find her. Thank you so much for coming in today, Crystal.
Thank you. This was awesome, and I feel like there's so many more things to talk about.
Well, there will be a part two.
Hooray!
So Primary Food is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep Heritage Radio Network alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. We have been trapped in concrete jungle, separated from the land. We have been trapped in concrete jungle, separated from the land. We are the 99%.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.